Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very accomplished professional turned entrepreneur from Singapore, Jingjin Liu. Jingjin, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Jingjin is the co-founder and CEO of ZaZaZoo, which is a personalized sexual wellness hub in Asia Pacific. She's also the co-founder of ABSO Drives Technology Components GmbH. So Jingjin, what an amazing journey you've had. Before I come to ZaZaZoo, tell me about your journey from automobiles to sexual wellness.
Well, yeah. Well, I grew up in China. And went to Germany when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And I have struggled my whole life with being a different kind of woman that Asian society expect you to be. I was always too loud, too extroverted, have too much opinions. And these are things that, as you can imagine, the Chinese society does not necessarily appreciate. And then I decided to make a move to a country, Western country, Germany in that case, mm-hmm. where individualism is more celebrated, mm-hmm. and to explore leadership, to explore to a different kind of environment. And I studied industrial engineering back in Germany, and to somehow find my way, you know, to find a way how to establish yourself as a woman. And but it has been always a passion and calling for me based on my own struggle, how to become a, you know, how to establish yourself as a young Asian woman. That I want to empower women to do more, to, you know, to build innate confidence. I have experienced that in corporate contexts a lot, that how women, you know, from various different cultures do not know how to be assertive and how to be confident in their competence. Mm-hmm. And through the whole career, I knew that one day, if I would have the opportunity, I want to build a company that empower women to do more. Mm-hmm. It was not clear to me it will be a sexual well-being company, but it has always been the passion and calling.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing. So let's talk about ZaZaZoo. Before you tell me about what you do here, tell me a little bit about the background of the name.
The background of the name comes from, is inspired from the series Sex and the City. Mm-hmm. At that time, they were describing a feeling that is difficult to describe. If you really like someone, there are butterfly feeling in your stomach, but you actually can't allocate, you can't describe, you can't describe this kind of feeling when you really like something, when you feel, you know, over the moon. And we have always considered that, you know, female pleasure, so orgasm, is something that very similar. Even the science has not found out where is the female pleasure, where is the G-spot. And so this is how the name has started.
Very interesting. And what was, you know, while I understand your need to be able to express your individuality and also be able to share your own perceptions of how women need to be find their own voice, what was your motivation to start a venture on sexual wellness?
I think it's twofold. One is, like you rightfully said, it's something that I have always felt, how can I build something, not another career leading company, not another lead-in company, to tell women to do more. I feel women are over advised and under supported. How can we build something that is help women to build confidence from within? Mm-hmm. And I've done many, many researches and find out that there are with the Maslow pyramid of demand. Mm-hmm. If you look at the basic needs, exercise, sleeping, dietaries, all these kind of things are already discussed many and tons of times, and sexuality, which is the very base of human demand, especially for women, is not discussed at all across the whole world. Asia being more conservative, But this is something that I feel the women today can be CEO, can be housemakers, can be anything we aim to be. Time has never been better for women. But in this aspect of our life, there is no platform or no, there isn't any authority also, like TripAdvisor or any platform that is addressing this issue and empower women to own this aspect of our life.
Fascinating. And when you, based on all the work that you have been doing, and I'm sure spoken to so many different people and supported so many people, what are some of the sexual wellness challenges a lot of people in our region face?
I think in general, the culture context matters. Of course, in the Asian society, I mean, sex is always considered as dirty and as a, as in the moment where you mention SEX, it is associated with porn, with dodgy sex toy stores, with everything that is, you know, is private, everything that is under the table. And especially from women's perspective, often sex is considered is equation of duty. So sex is means direct, it's a direct link to having children with reproductive health. So in terms of pleasure, women own actually, the minority of people know that, women own the only organ in human history, which is the clitoris, which has no function but giving pleasure. So nature has designed us in a way and we are not leveraging the power of our bodies. And I think, indeed, the biggest misconception is the culture as saying sex is very transactional. It is a duty.
You know, it's so fascinating you're talking about this, because I've often said that, you know, and you told me you lived in India for 2 years in a country which gave the world the Kama Sutra, which is such a highly populated country, and in a region, Asia, which probably has more than half the world's population. Why is it that intimacy and sex is such a taboo? And how are you addressing some of these issues?
I mean, we figured there is no winning formula. And it's like many, many startups, you try and everyone pivot really to understand what is missing. And we have some more barriers compared to the usual startup not operating in a taboo breaking space. Is that if a stigma like sexual well-being, especially female sexual well-being, is stigmatized in our culture for hundreds, if not for thousands of years, deeply rooted in our thought process, in the way of thinking, it is very challenging. It will take more companies like Zazazoo to break the taboo for women. And I think you mentioned interesting Kama Sutra. When you mention the Kama Sutra, most of the people think about the positions. Correct. And Kama Sutra is so much more. It's about love. It's about connection between people. And this is, again, the misinterpretation of the history. And I think this is it's a very challenging space. We have started at the beginning with a TripAdvisor kind of platform saying we have the educator, we have the consultation, and we have the product at the same time to really become a TripAdvisor for female sexual well-being. Until we recognize that it does not work this way, because women, as from today, women apparently don't consider sex as an essential part of their life. And we have to figure, and so nobody wants to go to the platform and seek for solutions. And then later on, we just find out it's not that the women don't want to have, don't enjoy or don't want to have sex. It's rather they don't want to have or they don't enjoy the sex they have today. So obviously you don't know what you don't know. It's that if you have never tasted great wine, you wouldn't miss the taste of great wine. And the same is true for female sexual well-being.
Well said, well said. And yet, you know, based on whatever one reads and sees, men and women react very differently to this basic need of all human beings. How do you manage your communication between the two different male and men, between men and women?
We are trying different ways again. And I think the male narrative is much more transactional. So men come straight to the point. We see that in the corporate context, in different contexts as well. Whereas women is rather considerate of, you know, the community, considerate of their environment, considerate of men's feeling, which often do not lead to what women want, but rather what the other person, in that case, men want. So we try to bring, I mean, again, this is something that is, you know, there's a huge invisible culture barrier. You can't just transfer someone, a woman saying, okay, today I want to have it this way. And even the alignment with the husband or with the man in that case is that will be shocking. We have to be culturally sensitive, you know, also in the marriage life, suddenly wife is saying, I would like to have things this way. And she has never demanded or asked. Men would feel very strange as well. And often we get pushback from husbands as well.
And, you know, Jingjin, based on your experience, is it, and you lived in Germany for many years, is this different in the Western world as compared to Asia?
It is. I think that sex generally in the world, we are not there yet. We haven't normalized the conversation around sex yet. However, in the Western world, girlfriends, for example, talk about sexual well-being, this topic, openly. I have to say, in India, during the time when I was living in India, in Calcutta, in Chennai, women are much more progressive in their 20s, between 20 and 30, I think this generation, compared to Southeast Asia. I mean, taking India apart, Indonesia or Singapore, I think women in their 30s, mid-30s, are still, we're still kind of this kind of in-between generation. Where it is still taboo, but you are already exposed to many social media, exposed to many different kind of resources around this topic, sex. So I think that in Western culture is definitely more open-minded, open up versus Asia. But Asia, there is no, you know, every country is different again.
Correct. And therefore, that takes me to my next question, which is on culture. How does culture impact discussions on adult topics?
A lot. I think that culture is a huge, I think the biggest difference that I experience in terms of culture between the language barrier, how we behave, is that Asian society, we care is about family and the community. In almost every single Asian country, is that if we, if the next generation, the daughters or the son, we're doing some of the things, for the face value of the family. We pursue a certain career for the face value of the company. Right. We marry some people for the face value of the company, of the family. Whereas in the Western culture, it's about individualism. It's about how I want to be. It's a lot about I and we. Therefore, when you put that into a sexual well-being context, pursuing individual pleasure, pursuing about what I, man or woman, want, is a very different approach versus here in Asia and saying, okay, I care, I marry someone for the sake of, you know, the next generation, for the sake of
procreation.
The right person, creation, exactly, recreation.
Precisely. Interesting. So, Jingjin, now let me move to the next part of our conversation, which is, you know, you have several programs to support couples. Tell us a little bit about the kind of programs that you run and the kind of support you give.
What we started with a consultation with, you know, individualized program. We ask actually couple, because we recognize every couple, every woman, individual, the challenge is very different. So there is no one solution fits all. So we ask actually couples to fill up, or individual, very often women stand alone, to fill up a survey that we have designed with leading sexologists and psychiatrists to find out what are their roadblocks, what is standing between sex or good sex or having sex at all between them. And what we recognize is that very often, however, after answering these questions, that couple and women often, they don't know. They don't know the reasons. They can't feel this kind of service as well. So what we have started is that we moved a little bit more into the corporate context, you know, working with gynecologists and working with corporate vendors, and then to advocate about how to integrate sexual well-being as an essential part of your life into, you know, essential part of into your daily life. And I think this has been more, have gained more traction than doing individual sessions. Americans, as very often, again, Asian value is that you need, very often in our society, we need a higher authority to endorse what we do. So in the moment where the gynecologist is saying, okay, you can't explore ABC, and the patient in that case feel, so it's not that I want to buy something. It's that it's doctor recommended. And the same is very true for companies. Okay, my company actually started this program about female well-being, sexual well-being being part of them. So I'm endorsed to, I am allowed to participate. So we recognize that this actually gives us more scale and more tractions. And once they have gained the basic knowledge and as next step, they can come to us as couples for couple counseling or individual counseling as well.
Amazing. And yet, you know, Jingjin, in any kind of a sexual relationship, there are two equal partners. I'd love to get your perspective on how are the men reacting to this kind of input?
It varies really from extreme anxiousness, saying, okay, towards to extreme openness. Okay. So I would say the majority of men, when they are, when living in a marriage, majority of men, they do want to support their wife's sexual journey because they don't understand so far that women don't have, they obviously see women often don't have great sex. They don't enjoy to that extent that men would enjoy. So the intention, most of men, the feedback are very positive. Having said that, I would say 20-30% is extreme rejection. I was saying, okay, you are bringing actually dodgy things, or you are actually embracing my wife to explore her sexuality, which is considered as a sin. So I think this is also still quite present in the society. Yeah, unfortunately.
Well said. And when you talk of a lot of the men, men folk who are, you know, as a, there as a part of this journey, you mentioned there could be a few, little bit of rejection. But I've often wondered that maybe people of my generation, and I'm 65 years old, were never really taught anything, you know, in school or by parents or anything like that. Is it necessary to start introducing this education at a certain level in school so that people don't grow up with misconceptions?
Yes, 100%. So this is something that we are still trying to push into, starting from private school, but ultimately to become a vendor of sexual education in school. Because let's face it, whether we like it or not, children nowadays, in their 12, in their 13, in their early teens, they are already exposed to social media, exposed to various unauthorized resources, very often is porn. And because there is no established sexual education in school system, there are, but it's very awkward. We have interviewed many, many schools and the students in the meanwhile, teachers don't feel comfortable teach around it, and students don't feel comfortable to listen to it because they know, they obviously know more than what teacher is talking. And we need to differentiate between biology and as anatomy versus what is reality, what is happening in the sex space. So I think that we try to push this a lot into the government to become a vendor, which will be a major milestone. But again, if you look at from a governmental context, I think this is valid for most of the country as well, is that the rulers are in the generation in their 50s and 60s often. And their perception of this topic obviously is still outdated. So for them to release a program that's empowered the next generation, it's a big hurdle as well.
Well said. And, you know, a lot of Asians have often been referred to as prudes. I mean, we have very large number of people in our region, and yet we don't want to talk about something which is so, so natural for most human beings. What are your thoughts? Is this kind of prudish behavior cultural? Is it because of elders in the family, or is it beginning to change?
The next generation definitely sees things very differently. Today, I think we are moving our culture, we are moving more into individualism. If you look at the Gen Z population now today, they emphasize a lot about me, like in the Western society. I think the prudeness, this is regardless what the parents are saying or the grandparents are saying, the Gen Z, they have their very own opinion and they own their body, they own the narrative of what they want to become, who they want to become. And I think the next generation is, I mean, we are still bringing this kind of value to the younger generation, but we will overcome this certain prudeness. But of course, we are tall Asian. We have such a big population, and the urban society obviously is very different than the rural area. So,
and in Asia, you mentioned that, you know, some parts of India, your experience was people are expressing themselves more, but In different countries in Asia, do you see a big difference in the way the topic of sexual wellness is handled or treated?
For me, I think the biggest surprising factor for me when I entered this business, when we were talking to investors about sexual well-being, the first immediate feedback of against starting a business like such in Southeast Asia is that you have a very big crowd in Malaysia or Indonesia of the Muslim society. They, for them, sex is taboo, which is a complete misconception compared to, for example, Indian Muslims or Malay Muslims. For them, in the moment when they got married, according to Quran, it's a mutual obligation. Men have to fulfill the duty for women and vice versa. So it's not a one-way street, in fact. So we actually have a lot of Muslim couple with Muslim background and men seeking out for solution in terms of premature ejaculation, for example, saying, I want my wife to finish as well. So what kind of solution do you offer? This has been a very big eye-opening moment for me and for our investors as well, that, you know, a misconception that we think the Muslim society is against sex, which is the complete opposite, especially when you are married.
Amazing. How amazing. And Jingjin, I've got time for one more question, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. What would you say are three lessons our viewers and listeners can take away from our conversation?
I think for, in terms of entrepreneur journey, is that someone really want to start a startup, I get this asked a lot, is that I think don't start any business or a venture if it's not a passion or calling, because it's all consuming, it will eat all your weekend, all your holidays, and it will eat you up emotionally, because things will never go down the road that you would expect it to be. And every entrepreneur journey is different. And if it's not a passion or calling, if you don't see the purpose behind the venture, when things get bad or get tough, you will want to quit. For sure. I have this thought every second day. Absolutely. Because entrepreneur journey is literally, I think, as you must have experienced tons of yourself, is that it's the up and downs, and you can't, there are so many uncontrollable factors. Right. So don't start a business because now you have a lot of capital in the market. Everyone wants to become entrepreneur, but don't start this journey for the sake of starting it. And right. So this is one major lesson. And the second one, I would say, if you are into this route, and I think make friends before you need them. And this is specifically for women. I think we all know the concept of networking, but in order to start a business or just be successful in general, I think in my corporate career versus where I am today, is that when you need to raise funds and then you start to talk to investors, that's too late. You want to have people on board on your journey, so you don't have to prove yourself, because they've already see what you are doing. And when you, so start to make friends before you need them. And I think last but not least, words to female crowd, because I'm really into female empowerment, is that do great things. Most women don't lack of competence. We lack of confidence in the competence. It's like, do great things, but really talk about it. Share your journey, share the up and downs, and let the world know what you are up to. Because if you can't be what you can't see, and you can't gain, people can't invest or join your venture if they don't know about you. And if you don't advocate for your venture, and nobody will.
Amazing, amazing. Lingjian, on that note of, and your amazing advice or lesson of make friends before you need them, I just want to say thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me at such length about the whole challenge and of sexual wellness and the incredible need that exists, which people are now hopefully beginning to address now that Zaza Zoo and you are taking on the mantle of addressing the challenges for both sexes, you know. And I think what you're doing is really a marvelous work that is going to benefit society all over the world. Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck.
Thank you so much for the grand call to you. I really love the name, for having me, for having such a controversial topic also on your show. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.